Netflix presents Inside Joke, Space Force. I'm your host, Jimmy O. Yang. Tell us about your favorite K-pop track, and don't forget your daughter in the prison yard. Now let's go inside Space Force. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're talking about episode 108, Conjugal Visit, of Netflix's Space Force, written by Maxwell Theodore Vivian and directed by David Rogers. It's conjugal visit time, and General Naird is all systems go. Meanwhile, Dr. Mallory deals with a time crunch while Chan drives Captain Ollie to Denver for an appointment.
Do not mansplain anime to me, you rude, rude bitch!
I can't wait to get rid of you.
Really? Is that why we've taken, like, 20 right turns in a row?
Construction detour.
You have kidnapped a woman. So you can yell at her about cartoons. How dare you?
Our guest today, my dear friend Tawny Newsome, who plays Captain Angela Ollie, and executive producer and director of this episode, Dave Rogers. David, you're the executive producer, director of this episode, and the editor of the show, right?
Yes. Well, I'm a director, a consulting producer mm-hmm. on the show, and I'm one of the editors, and I did my director's cut on the show, but credit should really go to Susan Vail, who did a great job putting the show together, and one of our assistant editors, Tim Cooper, stepped up to do some work on the show as well.
Big shout outs.
Yeah. It's nice of you.
How is it being like a director when you know you kind of, are you editing in your head, or you try to not do that? When you go in and direct an episode?
I'm not trying to edit so much, but I am trying to be efficient and get what I need. I never try to overshoot anything. If I feel like I'm never going to use this angle, or, you know, you shoot a wide a couple of takes, and then after that, I'll just get into the coverage that I want. And and I always want to make sure that I have, that I shoot things that match.
Yeah.
Basically.
For sure. And I think both me and Tawny were talking about this. This is one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, for sure.
We get to kind of leave the office and have fun. And of course, the K-pop dance in the car. It was so great.
We got to wear normal human clothes. I mean, that alone.
Right? You want to see this. Because your interaction mostly in the show is with Steve. Mine is with Malkovich and then sometimes Steve. So it's kind of like, okay, these are... Not just in the show. In the show, they're like the father figures or whatever. But outside, you know, they're like the one, two, and we're like the kids table a little bit. So it's kind of fun getting to interact.
Yeah, it definitely takes some of the pressure off, which is, I mean, not that those dudes put any pressure on you. If anything, right. It was just me, because they're so chill and nice and normal. But if anything, it was just me putting pressure on myself to be like, I don't want to mess up Steve. Like, he's got so much to do. Let me like really be on my shit. And then... When you and I get together, I guess what I'm saying is, Jimmy, I don't care about messing you up. Is that rude of me to say?
Yes. No pressure from me because there's no respect between you and I. So that's what it is. No, I love you, Tawny. And you're the only person I knew before coming in, because I did your podcast, Yo, Is This Racist, with you and my buddy Andrew T.
Yeah.
And in episode 3 of this podcast, we talked to Allison Jones, who said she met you at a UCB show where you weren't even performing, right?
Yeah.
And then you auditioned like the next day or the next week or something. So can you walk us through how did you get involved in this show?
You know what's wild? I don't even know if I want Allison to know this, but I used to think she didn't like me because for a long time, I would try to get in with her. I would try to go to auditions. And I mean... I moved to LA maybe like 4.5 years ago. And ever since I moved to LA, like I was fortunate and I didn't have a lot of trouble getting in with most casting directors because I had good representation and I came from Second City in Chicago. So I think I had a good reputation and representation. But I could never get in with her. And so I was like, man, Allison must have seen me somewhere and thinks I'm terrible. I guess that's it. She's like, you know, the my white whale. It's never going to work out. And then, I met her. I was with my buddy Mary Sohn, a really funny actor and comedian. And we just went to see some friends. I think we went to the White Women show, which is a bunch of super funny black dudes who do an improv show at UCB. Yeah, and I just ran into her in the audience, and she knew my name, but like I was very conscious that I'd never met her before. And then, so that was maybe 6 or 8 months before the audition for this. And then one thing I really loved about auditioning for Allison is like, I don't tend to get super nervous because, especially for a first audition, I know like, okay, I know what I'm going to do. If it's not what they want, I'm not going to get the part. But like, I'm not ever like, I don't ever have a ton of regrets about how I
approach
it.
You don't beat yourself up. Yeah.
No, because I'm just like, there's something about me that's not right for it. But like, I'm going to do my work and show them what I can do. And that's it. So the first audition, I wasn't super nervous, but she was so cool. Like, she told me that she was going to call me back right after, which I was like, man, that never happens.
Yeah.
And she was just so chill about it. She's like, yeah, we'll call you back. We'll have you come meet Greg. And then I got nervous.
Oh, wow. So your first audition was just on tape with Allison and Ben, right?
Yeah.
And then your second one, you did three, no?
I might have done four, because then I also did one with Greg and Brent and Steve.
And was there a lot of improv in that one with Steve?
Yeah, yeah. We did the scenes, and then we did a bunch of improv at the end. I remember, I think Greg pitched like, okay, you know, this is your boss. You're both off duty having a drink in the local town. And neither one of you really wants to see each other, but it's awkward that you don't, like, so you have to address each other, basically. And I think we did a scene where I was trying to, I don't know. I remember talking about CVS shopping for some reason. I was very nervous in the Steve audition, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, he does have a thing about him that is very disarming and nice and cool.
Yeah. I mean,
he immediately
shook my hand. He was so warm. I think I was just hit. You know, when you see someone and you're like, oh, you're the guy.
Yeah.
This is wild. You're the guy. So that was, again, that was on me.
Let's talk about this episode. There's so many fun parts.
Yeah.
Because I only know the part with me and Tani. And I watched the episode a couple of times. And one of my favorites is the three-hander with Don Lake, John Malkovich, and Ben Schwartz. That was so fun. And you shot so many three shots and let them go and improv, right, Dave?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I worked on Seinfeld. And if you remember that show, every episode had an A story, a B story, a C story, and a D story. But they were all kind of equal. Mm-hmm. Like, that each character had a story. And so I get the script for this. And most of the scripts that we've seen are like, you know, there's an A story and maybe there's a B story happening. Mm-hmm. This one had four stories.
Yeah.
And they all had a lot of weight. I mean, you've got, you know, Steve's story where, you know, Mark Naird is going on his conjugal visit. Mm-hmm. You've got his daughter goes to the prison, and then she meets one of the other inmates and runs along with her and talks. And then we've got you know, Malkovich and Don and Ben. Those guys, they have to interview people. And then, of course, we have you guys, you know, going on a little road trip as she gets her eyes done. So it was fun to get, you know, a little bit of everybody in this episode, and that everybody has a certain amount of weight, and getting to balance it, you know, when once we see the weight of the scenes, like how much material there is, and then getting into editing was really super fun. I like three shots. I like seeing people. I mean, you always want to cover yourself and protect and be like, okay, I want to make sure I get the singles, that if we have to cut stuff, it's easier to cross takes, things like that. But it is fun when you got three guys who can improv and can bounce off each other. I love to be able to play. A lot of the things that where my inspiration comes from are movies. And I was watching even just a small scene in Jaws the other day. And I love it. It's just a scene with Roy Scheider and Richard Dreyfuss and the mayor. And it's a wonder, but it's not like a typical, oh, look, we're walking down a street and we're following this and there's all these challenges. But it's just a long take with these two guys talking to the mayor and how they come around him. And you see the sign in the background, the Amity. And I'm like, I love when things play. I just love when things play. And when you see all the characters, you don't always have to, you know, go to what we call like basic sitcom type of coverage. So for me to be able to have the camera play on these three guys and let them do their thing was a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, and I loved working with you for, I think, exactly what you're describing, is that you did let us play, but you also, you know, some directors let you play, but then you also feel a little too loosey-goosey, or you're like a little nervous, like, was that good? Like, I feel like you gave us enough structure and guideposts, and something about knowing that you were going to be involved in the edit was really helpful, because I was like, it makes you feel like, okay, well, he's not going to let me go in some direction that's completely unusable, you know? So it was really, it was really fun and comforting working with you.
Thank you.
So guys, we got a clip. This is this is the scene when Chan took the day to drive Angela to the optometrist, and then she's walking out of the optometrist's office, and Chan is trying to guide her. So let's take a listen.
Keep going. Yeah, just keep going straight. You're walking like a ninja.
Okay, can you just like lead me, please?
No. I'm not comfortable with that. Two adult acquaintances should not be holding hands.
What? Why? Who are you trying to seem single for, huh? That guy? Oh, he has cats. I'm sorry. Since I can't see, my sense of smell is heightened.
Fine. Hold on to my shirt.
What?
Hold on to my shirt. Come on.
No, this looks ridiculous.
How do you know? You can't see.
Because there's no version of a man leading a woman on a leash that looks cool. Whoa. Watch where I'm going.
I am. I just led you around a huge pile of spiders.
Oh, why?
Okay, I'm kidding. It's a joke.
Oh, that was a joke? Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, I get why it's funny. Right, because I can't see and I'm trying to protect myself and I can't. Yeah, that's very funny. You're very good at humor.
Thank you.
What was that?
Your shadow?
Dave, remember us trying to come up with a line for that guy?
Yeah.
What he could smell like?
It was great. You had a bunch that were great. Because originally in the script, it was, we thought we would be in a dirtier, you know, parking lot. And, you know, like, oh, there was urine or something like that on the ground. I was like, that doesn't fit. Like, it would, let's come up with some alts. And you had one that was like, ooh, somebody ate cabbage. And I love that one too. But you were like on fire. Every one you were on fire.
I started to feel bad because then we'd reset with that background actor. And I was like, hey man, like nothing personal. Like, I'm sorry, man. It's not you. I'm not like looking at you and saying these things. You get it right. Like, he was cool. But I was like, just so you know.
That scene was so fun, and we get to get up on our feet also, you know, and I was watching this for the first time with my friend, and then it's when I took off my jacket, right? And then she was like, oh, look at you, you're so in shape. I'm like, why the fuck do you sound surprised like I'm in shape? Like, I'm not out of shape, man, you know? That was a really fun scene, and the whole episode is so good.
There were a few takes where, you know, Tawny reacts to the possibility that they're spiders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like, okay, we got to see, let's see what we get. Let's see, you know, we shoot some takes, and some takes are kind of big where it's like, oh my God, it's just, you know, like, and it's fair if she hates spiders. At the same time, she's an astronaut, you know, or an astronaut to be.
Gotta be a little brave.
So there are other takes where it's like, okay, she's, you know, this is jarring to her, and it's, you know, it's scary, and it's, you know, she can't see, but we still, you know, she finds the performance where she grounds it and Jimmy reacts. And, you know, I make sure, like, yeah, here's a character that's not, it's not too broad. It's not unbelievable. And at the same time, it's very funny. Like, that's really the goal that we're going for. And Jimmy, you know, a lot of times he kind of deadpans these answers to her. And, you know, in this episode, we got a great one where she's like, oh, you're very funny. And he's like, thank you. it's really nice.
You also deadpan to me, Jimmy. I'm going to call myself out because when we were filming it and I had those big like blue blocker glasses on, I thought the best way to sell that I couldn't see would be to actually close my eyes, because I was like, camera can't see that my eyes are closed, so let me close my human actor eyes and stumble around here. And I think I ran into you a couple times, and Jimmy just turned to me and he goes, you don't have to close your eyes.
Very method acting. I had to call her captain and Mr. President in between takes. It was so weird.
How dare you?
That was so fun. And we shot all of those scenes. I think the car scenes and the eye doctor scenes all in one day. So the whole day we just hung out with each other. And it really warmed up.
Yeah, it was really fun.
And I mean, let's talk about the genesis of these scenes and this developing Angela Chan relationship. That all opened up because Brent Forster and Greg, Brent's the head writer and Greg, of course, showrunner, they were so open to our ideas. And I randomly went in there one day and told them about this BWAM, like we're exploring what relationships can each characters, you know, develop in between each other. And I told him, Black Women Asian Men, BWAM, there are meetup groups out there. And it's very interesting because it's statistically the least likely couple. But we have very strong track records when it comes to a long-term relationship and marriage. And I think I said that in one of the episodes prior. And then they just kind of developed out. And then me and you went in there and actually pitched a bunch of stuff. Right, Tani?
Yeah, because I think, well, first of all, props to you for pitching. You know, so it can be scary as an actor to like go in. And even when everyone's so welcoming, you're still like, what right do I have to tell you guys what to do? So thank you for pitching. And thanks for including me in that pitch, being the only BW in your AM world. but yeah, like I really loved that idea because, you know, we're starting to see more couples like that on TV and stuff, but you don't see that many because, as you said, statistically, they aren't as likely to find each other for a myriad of, you know, cultural and racism reasons of why those two groups aren't programmed to think that the other is an acceptable partner. But thankfully, that's starting to break down a bit. And like you said, when they do find each other, it's like it's this amazing kismet. So that's already such a great place to start. Even if it is just a friendship, we're not sure exactly where this relationship will go, but that's a great place to start from, just knowing like, okay, these people are going to actually really get along. They're going to have a lot in common. They're going to, I love that because it's such a positive and fertile place to play from.
And then they really let us draw out the specifics, like your Congo story. That's a real story you pitched.
It is. I think we were just chatting. So Maxwell, the writer, is also a Black guy. And he was talking about how I think he brought up the idea of like a heritage project in school or something. And I was like, oh, yeah, I just like picked Congo because I'd just seen the movie. And I think Brent and everyone were kind of like, that maybe hadn't occurred to them. Like
myself included. That never occurred to me because I have a story. Yeah, like I came from a different country, but it's like it's not like I'm making up a country. And then Maxwell was like, oh yeah, that me too. Like,
yeah, Maxwell said that he just took a dart, or not maybe not a dart, but he just like pointed at a map and whatever he landed on, he was just like Senegal or whatever. But yeah, I guess it's trippy to me that like it's not widely known that descendants of slaves in America don't know where we come from. Like, I feel like everyone knows that because the people I talk to get that. But maybe the larger mainstream audience doesn't think about that.
I don't. I'm myself included, even as a minority. I mean, it's such a funny anecdote, just like a school kid doing this school project. But at the same time, there's so much you can think about. Like, if you can really go down the hole and write a whole presentation about this.
Yeah, it can get too dark real quick.
Yeah. And the same thing with me. I pitched in the same pitch meeting. I pitched the my buddy throwing a fork at me and Marie Callender's. That was absolutely true. When I was 16 years old, I pissed off my Korean friend. And we're like good friends. And he just threw a fork at me and Marie Callender's. He actually threw a fork at my buddy. And then of course, that became all of our stories. And his grandma was actually a really sweet woman. But I don't know why. That was an improvised line.
You're trying to get that on the record now, huh?
I know. I don't want him to beat me up. Bo Kim, I'm sorry, dude. Okay? Grandma Kim is a very sweet woman. Woman is just in the heat of the moment.
Wait till the bloopers come out for that scene.
Oh, great. What else did he say about this poor woman?
In the heat of the moment, I don't know why. I just improvised. But Grandma Kim was a bitch, though. Comedically, that just felt right. And I can't believe that made the cut. Now I'm in so much trouble with Bo. Good thing he lives in Korea.
You also pitched the vehicle that you guys drive as well.
I love this.
It's I think for me, I was an immigrant. You know, I came from Hong Kong and my whole life, it's been trying to be very American, listening to hip hop. And I told Brent, I was like, I drive a Jeep now. It's way too big for me, my Jeep Grand Cherokee. I'm 5'5". I literally have to jump out of the car. It's completely impractical, but it's just he wants to be, you know, American and view it as American. So I was like, wouldn't it be fun if he just drives like a big ass pickup truck? And then Chevy leased us like this futuristic kind of weirdish pickup truck. Yeah, but it was so fun. And seeing how Chan dresses, how Angela dresses outside of work, that really informs the character too. That's why I love this episode so much.
Yeah, it really did for me too. I was like, because I, you know, when we had our meetings with Kathleen Felix Hager, our fantastic costume designer, she's such a sweet, chill, cool woman. She did Veep, where I was always drooling over like Julie Louis-Dreyfus's outfits in Veep, and I knew I wouldn't get to dress like that, but I was like comforted by having her at the helm because I was like, okay, when I do get to wear street clothes, she's gonna make me look cool. And we had kind of talked about like, how does Angela dress when she's not in uniform? And, you know, I know some service women who, when they do get the chance to be out of uniform, they're like all out. They're like lashes, nails, like they really want to show, they want to show the body, they want to show everything. And I was like, I don't know that that's her because I think she's still really like outdoorsy. I think she tries to stay like active. So we had this idea that like, anything she wears, she could probably go like do a light hike in it. Like she's never in something that she couldn't kind of like go truck up a mountain or something. So this was Kathleen's way of being like, okay, but she's still cool. She has a leather jacket. I was like, hell yeah.
So we talk a lot about K-pop in this and manga, which I think a lot of young fans and Asian fans, however, it's cool people would love. Dave, I know in the script it was an Aces and Angel song in the beginning, which is like a kind of indie-ish K-pop band, a girl band, I believe.
I think we may have even listened to certain songs in the car during while we were shooting and rehearsing. And then we'll plug in either that song or a different song when we're editing. That's the reason why when we shoot something with music where we'll start playing it and then we'll pull it out and someone else will just count or give you guys a beat. And that gives us the freedom to change the song later.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think we're going to ask the same question about the BPM because the ones you played for us were like three different ones. So then is that wild when you're editing to try and match our movement just so like we look like we're on beat?
Yeah.
Is that hard to do?
No, I mean, I think that what we did originally was just lay in the track that we practiced with, I think what we did was lay in the track that we shot with, and then you can kind of see where the beats are. So then, if you plug in another song, you can kind of match where the beats are, so you're still synced up to the music.
So it has to be about the same BPM.
Can't go from like a really fast song to a slow song. That won't that won't work.
We'd look a mess.
And that whole dance, Tani, we had to learn it that day with our wonderful dance coordinator man, who is the sweetest man. And we get like, were you there or did you, Dave, or did we just do it and then we just showed you and you're like, okay.
I think you guys just did it and showed me. That was it. It was like, I knew that. I think, I'm not sure even when you guys practiced originally, but you guys, because I think I was shooting something else and you guys might have been rehearsing. And then we came to shoot.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one of the things we did was use technology for that scene of you guys in the car was instead of being out on the road and instead of using blue screens or green screens for the windows and comping stuff in, we use these this new technology, which are these high-tech LED screens. Huge screens, and we have playback happening at the same time, so they can play the backgrounds. We don't have to comp anything in. It gives us depth. It also gives us light that reflects onto the car, so it's you can look on the inside of the car, you can see reflections, you can see how it's hitting your faces and stuff like that, which is really nice. So I think once we got in there, it was like, all right, let's get the back plates working and let's see what the dance looks like. And that was it. I mean, I love what you guys were doing. And, we hammered out like the moments of like, when does Tawny pause? When does Jimmy realize he's busted? And then when we start up again, how small are Jimmy's motions, keeping it a secret from her.
Oh, that was so fun. And Tawny's a much better dancer than I was. I could not get the body roll right.
I still can't.
Like mine's so stiff.
A seated body roll in a car is a challenge. I have to drive too.
Like that's a tough one.
You had a lot going on. Yeah, you had to sell the activity of driving. Oh my God, do you remember how I forgot about those LED screens, but do you remember how like dizzying that actually was? Because they're moving.
so bright.
You feel like you're moving and they're really bright. And then we would get out of the car in a black sound stage where like there's probably 150 people in there but you can't see anyone. It was the most disorienting thing.
So I think for the audience out there that doesn't know, usually it's a car on a sound stage sitting, and then the wheels move a little bit with some mechanism, and then there's green screens three ways, and then the camera in the front of the car, right, Dave? And then they'll comp in stuff in the green screen.
Yes, we'll like I said, you'll either shoot this for real outside on the streets, or we'll go to the mountains and shoot, or we'll do it usually on a soundstage with green screens in the windows.
But this time, instead of green screens, these massive LED TVs, basically like a 120-inch TV surrounding the car, which looked amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
Crazy cool.
And there's nothing you needed to do in post for that. Like, it looks like the shot already looks like it's there, right?
That's it. Yeah, we're good to go. There's nothing we had to do.
Wow,
that's so great. Because it looked really real. So many older films and like lower budget films and TV shows just in the 80s just looked terrible. You can tell it's a green screen.
Yeah. Well, comping stuff in is, you know, always a little challenging. And then even in the old days, they would just use rear screen projection, and that didn't look very good. They didn't have steady cams and things like that. So you would see the images really, you know, the background really shaking and things like that. But this, they can kind of control how far it is, the depth. And it looks pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. And all the other storylines are so great in this. You got the Diana jogging with the prisoner. Was that shot in outside of a real prison?
Yeah, so we went up to Palmdale to a prison. I mean, it was pretty far away.
It's a real prison operational.
It's a prison in Lancaster, yeah.
Yeah, in Lancaster, and it's actually shut down now. They're not using it as a prison, but at one point it was a real functioning prison, and we had scouted several places, but nothing gave us what we needed. You know, there's always a place where you can see fences and buildings, but you need to see the reverse. And what was really nice was that you could see mountains in the background. We had snow out there. You could see in the distance. And, you know, we also shot some stuff for you guys. We shot the exterior of the truck going by,
Okay, wait.
Who was driving the truck, and who was our stand-ins in the
Did
truck?
Did you see? They were doubles, but they weren't our usual stand-ins. Wait, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this was blowing my mind because this is so layered. So in that scene you guys are talking about with the jogging inmates, one of the background actresses, the one in the braids, was my usual stand-in, my second team, Krista Carter. She's just in a wig. She's in a braided wig.
Oh, my God. I did not recognize her.
Doing the jogging. First of all, Krista Carter, I got to give a shout-out to her because, like, there's not a lot of 5'10", 5'11", mixed chicks with our skin tone running around in these streets. So I'm so glad they found her. She's also training to be a pilot. So her getting to, like, sit in the helicopter every day, she was, like, telling me different things about how it worked. And it was really cool to, like, have that connection with her.
I like her because she doesn't want to really be an actress at all. She's
not
just
at
there
all.
To feed her piloting degree.
Which is wild because I'm like, that's why you should be an actress. You would actually be like very good. But no, her dream's in the skies, man. We are the most opposite people. But then I thought that the people driving the truck was going to be Krista and your stand-in, but they didn't use them for some reason. And you got
Can you tell if you look and you can't tell though.
Well, Krista was shooting with us. Krista is one of the prisoners.
Because we kept
that's
doing
part of
all
the gang
the,
that's running.
Right. Yeah.
With Aaron.
So we kept doing all these multiple units, and that's why.
Yeah.
But in the wide shot, you can't tell it's not us driving. There's a lot of very interesting shots. Well, let's talk about the A story here with Steve and Lisa. That's great. It played out like a play. It's like a two-person play in this very confined space. It's very different from what we're used to in this big launch rooms and stuff. What was your approach in shooting that, Dave?
Well, it's so funny that you guys are like, we love this episode because we got to go out and it's like a road trip for us. And for me, I've been, working, seeing all these episodes, editing them. And, you know, I see like big fights happening in the middle of the desert, people going to the moon, you know, and then I get my episode. I'm like, okay, I got, other than you guys going out, I'm like, I've got these two people in one room for most of the episode, these three people in a conference room for most of the episode, then I've got a prison. So I was like, oh God, what, you know, but you get great material, you know, you get a great script, great actors. That's really what counts.
Yeah, it kind of let us play, which is fun.
For me to get to be able to get Steve Carell and Lisa Kudrow, two great great actors and who have such good comedy, you know, sense of comedy, was just a lot of fun. And it was really when we shot, it was Lisa's first day with us.
Wow.
So she jumped right in. And I had worked with Lisa before, and I edited a show she did called The Comeback.
Love that.
Amazing show, Dave.
Thanks. So we had a little familiarity, and I said, you have any questions about your character? Let's, we could talk about it, but otherwise we're jumping right in. And that was really what happened. We got to the set, we got to the this one room trailer, and basically that's how Greg and Maxwell had kind of envisioned it, was like a play, and we go through various scenes in this play. So for me, and working with the DP, Simon, we wanted to, get good angles that gives us a little bit of cinema, but it's mostly about the actors here. It's really just, capturing what they're doing and seeing their expressions and how they're reacting and making sure that we give them the room that they need to play.
Yeah, the awkward kiss was so amazing. How many different takes of that were there? And was it just their idea? Did they do it? Or was there some kind of direction on that?
No, I mean, it was scripted that, they kiss and it's just not right. And then, later they kiss again and it is right.
Yeah, it pays off beautifully.
And no, it was just they just, kind of worked on it, figured it out. And this is what was nice about this was because we hadn't worked with Lisa before, and when they came in the morning for these scenes, we spent time to rehearse. We didn't rush. We didn't say, "Hey, we're going to just jump in and start shooting." Mm-hmm. We cleared the set. It was me, the actors, the director of photography, Greg Daniels, Brent Forrester, a couple other key crew members, and we just kind of discussed it and went through it, and we kind of blocked it together, and just, we asked questions, and then we said, okay, if we're here, and we kind of went through a couple of the scenes at a time just to see, well, where are we then after this, and where do we, just to make sure that things connect. Okay, they're here on the bed, and then are they, on the couch, and just asking questions, because some things weren't crystal clear in the script, where they're like, okay, here's the first scene, and now the next scene they're in the bed. Well, were they intimate? Is this afterwards? Or is this that they haven't done anything? So it was, a little bit of figuring that out. But basically, my whole thing was, we had enough time. We weren't rushed. We didn't have to shoot everything of them in one day. It was like, let us have time. We would spend a good hour and a half rehearsing. Then we would start shooting, and we weren't rushed in the shooting, and that was really nice, just to give us time to, I mean, as actors, what that's like. Sometimes you can spend time rehearsing, it takes time to light, to set up, and then they're like, "All right, hurry up, let's go." Yeah. And I'm never a fan of that. It's like the ratio of setting up to shooting, it should be different. It should be, more time spent on the actual shooting that what you're going to see.
I love that. Yeah. Was all those scenes shot in one day, that conjugal visit with Steve and Lisa?
2 days. We spent 2 days. So that's what was in a typical TV show. I've been in those situations where we would shoot them all in one day, because it's like, it's two people, one set. We could shoot all this in one day. But we fought to say, hey, give us time here. This is important. We need time to be able to rehearse and to make room to explore things.
Yeah. Well, and for people that don't know, when we basically finished shooting, and then towards the end, we found out Lisa joined the cast, and then you guys gang taped everything of hers after we left. So me and Tawny has never even met Lisa.
That's true. I mean, we don't have any scenes with her anyway, but yeah, I didn't even, you were wrapped, Jimmy. We still had a bunch of stuff to do.
Oh, right. In 9 and 10, right?
Yeah.
That fun stuff in January.
I mean, by the end, we were shooting, multiple crews, getting first unit, second unit, and Greg was always jumping in. We were still working on stuff for two with the chimp. So he kept going back to get second unit stuff with that. So I've worked with Greg, you know, since The Office. I came on board The Office right after the pilot, and I even tweaked the pilot for broadcast. But basically, I started on the first episode of The Office.
You start as an editor or?
As an editor. Uh-huh. Yeah. I was an editor, and then I started directing and producing, you know, later on as the series went on. But Greg is really specific, especially in the first few seasons. He gets his hands in there, and he's like, I want it this way, and this is why. And you know, some people would be like, oh, you're such micromanaging or this or that, or you're really, you know. And it's like, he knows what he's doing. And he also knows if he goes somewhere too far, he'll be like, no, go back to the previous version. Go back to this. No, you guys have it better. Like, he know, he's it's not about ego. It's about he knows he has a vision. He knows what he wants. It's up to us to get that to him, how he wants it. And that's it. And that's the process. And it's like, hey, he's the guy. It's working. Let's just do our best. It's almost like, you know, on the West Wing, President Bartlett, when everybody in the would say, I serve at the pleasure of the president, you know, and that's what I feel like. Like, we're here, you know, to really kind of serve Greg's vision and make something special.
Yeah, no, he's great. He does have a grand vision, my man. A couple of my favorite shots in the episode. One of them is the 360 reveal in the boardroom with Malkovich and them. And then the reveals Eddie and Pella's character being hired. That was great. How'd you come up with that 360 pan? That was brilliant.
I can't take full credit for that. I executed it well with the director of photography, but it was in the script that, like, oh, the camera comes around and reveals. It was one of those moments
I was like, let's
make sure where these guys are, where he's sitting, that we can pull this off in a way that it's a reveal. Like, that's, and the timing, and to get it, like, okay, here we go. He finishes and boom, there we are on them. Like, that's the reveal of who, here's America's best right in front of you.
That scene is so freaking funny.
Chris Gethard and Aparna Nancherla, and Aparna kills me in that scene with her with her questions about what's going to be on the moon. And my favorite, which I think was an ad, it must have been an ad of hers, because as you pan back to Malkovich, Aparna's just going, have you considered the effect on werewolves, especially in their prime environment or something
in
like
that? In their prime environment.
Yeah. Prime environment destroyed me.
Did they break ever? Because it was so good. And the three-parter, you can tell, these are the loosest scenes, I think, of the first season, which I loved. A lot of kind of talking over each other, you can tell. Dawn and Ben and everyone playing off of each other. Were there a lot of, like, cracking up, breaking up, or did you have to rein them in a little bit?
No, you know, I mean, sometimes they would go on and on a scene. I feel like, guys, we need a button to the scene. You keep talking, like, they kept going and going, and I'm like, I have nowhere to cut. We're gonna just abruptly cut in the middle of you guys saying something.
Yeah, Dave, you know that's an improviser trick, right? You know we ramble and we keep the ramble funny so that you have to increase our screen time like that. Now I'll show the sausage here.
Yeah, I'm aware. And sometimes I'm like, guys, I'm on to you, but I still need to be able to end the scene. Greg used to hear me say that when we'd work on The Office. He'd be like, Dave just wants him to shut up. And he didn't understand. And then finally he gets it where he's like, yeah, Greg, where am I supposed to cut? They're talking over each other. There's nowhere clean. Yeah. There's nowhere clean to get out, you know.
Those three is gold. And the Malkovich meltdown was so wonderful.
Oh my God.
And you even see him melt down a little more in the upcoming episodes. He's so good. Like, when I read the script, I guess I didn't see a massive breakdown that's extremely comedic. I had imagined kind of like a smaller thing. So did you guys work that out during the scene, or did he just bring that?
He did it in the first rehearsal. I mean, matter of fact, like, you know, one of the ways I work is that I really try to prepare and do my homework and have a plan for each scene blocking wise. Like, okay, you're here. This is, you know, this is what I'm thinking. And then I bring it to the actors, and then I'm open to changing. It's like, oh, what if we did this? What if I stand here? What if I turn at this? You know, I think it's all collaborative in a process. So we started to rehearse, and he stood where he stood, and the other two guys were, you know, behind the table, and he just started going. I'm like, oh, I'm loving this more than what I had where I had him, you know, because I was trying to change up they're in the conference room for like four scenes, and I was like, I was trying to just change it up so it doesn't look like the same angles every time. But he just went back and forth and then, you know, blew up on that table. I'm ruined. No. And I was like, oh, my God. It's just fun. And when you get something like that, it's great. And you're like, yeah, do it again. Let's make sure, you know, we got cameras on this and get a couple angles and just seeing the other two guys, you know, react to it. So that was, But he did it right in the rehearsal, you know.
He's amazing. And Tony, did you get to spend a lot of scenes with John?
You know what's funny is that we don't really have – when I watched everything, I was like, I feel like I spent so much more time with John than I did on screen. I think it's because all that stuff we did in the launch room, especially for 9 and 10, which we shot separately.
That's right, yeah.
I was coming in. So me, Aparna, Chris, Owen Daniels, Hector Duran – well, all of us, we would come in on days when we weren't filming on camera. So we would have these off-camera dialogue days, which I really grew to love because you didn't have to get into hair and makeup. You didn't have the pressure of like, okay, I'm going to be filming my thing. You kind of got this added rehearsal of like, because we could read out of the script and we were just there to feed dialogue for all you guys in the launch room. So I feel like I got to spend a lot of time around
John. Yeah, I felt like we all hung out a lot. But then when I watched the season, I was like, oh, did Tawny have scenes with John? That would be a really fun pairing also.
I would love that. Yeah, other than talking to him through, you know, in the launch room. That we
Yeah. And the last scene of this episode is so beautiful, of Steve taking off in the airplane and he just breaks down crying. And there's something about that cry, because it's always like, oh, in a comedy, do you do like a comedic, complete breakdown kind of comedic cry? Or do you actually do like an internal, very sad cry? And somehow it's such an authentic, beautiful human cry, but it's kind of funny.
To me, it's not super funny, and it's not supposed to be. There's a little bit of humor with just that he is, you know, by himself in this helicopter. But it's you know, and he's crying pretty big at points. Like it's real. But the comedy for me comes, you know, with what's happening, you know, around that he's basically left his daughter. Yeah. He forgot about her, who went off for a run. Yeah. And, you know, like that's the kind of contrast with it. And also this wasn't scripted. You know, Susan Vale, again, who edited it, said, oh, I have an idea for a song for the
end. Yes, I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
And she put it in and I was like, I really like it. I go, it's a bold choice. I mean,
the monkeys, Dream Believer. It's incredible.
It's a bold choice. And again, it's a little bit of a contrast to you know, what's happening in the scene, but it also fits in the world of what Steve kind of listens, what Mark Naird listens to, and songs that he listens to throughout the series that helps him calm down, from Kokomo to Big Girls Don't Cry. So I was like, all right, let's go for it. And we showed it to Steve Carell, who loved it. Steve Carell loved it.
That's
Greg,
great.
Not so much. Greg, we had to convince him. He was like, no, and I was like, if you don't like it, Steve said he wants you to call him. and then we had to fight a little bit with Greg and you know, a little bit of a compromise, because I didn't even want to futz it or anything like that to make it sound like it's coming through the speakers. To me, it is like a filmmaker's choice to be like, oh, he's listening in his head to this music. Mm-hmm. And we've done that in other episodes. But Greg said, no, it's got to be that he's listening to it. I don't want to just make it that it's a choice of the, you know, the filmmakers. It's like, okay. So it was still – to me, it works great, sounds great. And the way it plays that, it's kind of, you know, it's coming through and it's futzed. But it's – you can hear it. And then once we're outside the helicopter, we come up full volume on it, you know.
Yeah.
Did Greg have a pitch for another song or a different type of song, like different direction?
No, I mean, I think that he just was a little worried, like, oh, what are we saying? What statement are we saying here? Mm-hmm. Like, that we were being too intrusive, and we kind of had to make our case for it that, hey, we have other moments where he's listening to music and it's in his head. And it's just something like, I mean, we had score. I mean, basically it was like we could have had the option of just scoring it at the end and doing that. But we all contribute musically. Even the end, I don't want to say, I don't know how these air or when they drop or anything, if they're all, you know. But even in the final episode, music that comes in towards the end, the last song is a cue. We didn't have anything scripted originally, so it's like, oh, try this, try this. And I said, oh no, let's use this that we've already heard before. This would be great to play, and it kind of bookends the series in a way for season one.
For sure. And it's so interesting, all that stuff. It's so much thought that went into that last 15 seconds. Of course, you start with Steve's wonderful performance of that crying, and then the comedic cut to the daughter left behind, and then to the music. That is so much thought just to the last 15 seconds, and I think that's what makes the show so good. It's just there's so many layers and collaboration in between all the different departments.
We also had a plot out. I mean, this is a little bit of the sausage, but it was also saying, okay, here's the front where the helicopter lands, okay, in front of this prison. And then we see Steve go in, you know, Mark Naird goes into the prison. And then Erin is sitting there. But now we need to see where she's looking. And she's looking at the side of the prison and she sees these people running. But the yard wasn't there. Like I understand eye lines, and I had to explain to everybody, she's looking this way. We're going to shoot the reverse at another location at this prison. These people are going to be looking back at her. It will cut together, and then she'll walk out of frame and then come in over here. So it was like, I said, so at no point can we see what's over here when we're, you know, to her left when we're looking at the front of the prison. And to me, it cut together, you know, really nicely. When the helicopter leaves and she comes, you know, running, it was like, oh, this is going to be great. Now she comes back. She's running from the other direction, comes back. The helicopter's gone. And it was great to be able to get that reverse over her shoulder. And then we see the helicopter, you know, flying away. I mean, that really brings, like, you know, you can see how far it is. And it's like, oh, he's not stopping. He's completely he's so emotional. He's completely forgotten about her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think the audience has it first, too. When he's in there crying, I don't think that you say, like, oh, wait, where is she?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a nice, that's to me a fun and taking the situation that was a little bit of heartbreaking and adding some comedy to it.
I guess that's all I want to talk about in the episode. I want to ask you, Tani, just a couple, I guess, things about the show and your character in general. Did you do a bunch of research going in this, past female astronauts, past female pilots? I know you talked a lot about the military consultant that you had.
Yeah, we had that great military consultant, Mark Vasquez, who, he was there to answer any question that came down to, like, uniform stuff or, how you stand, parade rest versus attention, how you address different generals, all that stuff, which is really fascinating to me because obviously I've never been in the military, nor should I. so it was cool to have someone who was clearly so passionate and knowledgeable about it. There are still some, like, movie magic liberties that we took just to suit, you know, because we were inventing a new branch of the military, even though one exists, we're not, like, copying them one for one. So we were able to take some liberties there. But yeah, in terms of, like, research, what I really wanted to do, I was really concerned with looking like I was reasonably flying a helicopter. I was just, you know, like, when I only had the first couple of scripts, all I really knew about her was, like, okay, she is a good pilot, because otherwise she wouldn't have been entrusted with this, you know, really sensitive and important detail, this job to transport the general around. So
yeah,
I watched a lot of takeoff and landings just on YouTube, just a lot of, like, flight simulator type things and then actual pilots with, like, GoPros in their cockpits just to see, like, where do your hands go? What does what?
Right.
And that was honestly really helpful because, like, just looking at their posture and how they sat taught me a lot. But yeah.
Yeah. No. We've done a lot of press together. Me and Tani was getting paired up. And every reporter had to ask you this question. So, Tani, tell us, can you actually fly a helicopter now?
Oh, and I feel like in the beginning of the two long days of press, I used to be like, oh, haha, wouldn't that be fun? But by the end, I was just like, nah, girl, no, I don't fly a helicopter. What are you talking about? I went to school
for
mime,
do you think?
Basically. I'm an actor. I am trash. No. This is all pretend.
This is so fun, guys. I love this one. It's been a great discussion with both of you, a couple of my favorite peoples. I think that's it. I think we can wrap this up, right? You guys, do you guys have any questions for each other?
Yeah, Dave, what have you been dying to ask me since this wrapped? I know you've been forced to stare at my face in edit. So maybe there's been something that's been nagging at you that you just need to, you need to know.
No, but I'm excited for people to see the show. I'm really excited, you know, with episode 108, it was nice to have, you know, four stories, and I got to work with everybody. And, you know, the series as a whole, I think it's a great, just a really nice arc of, you know, where it starts and where it goes. And, you know, there's a lot of fun stuff. I'm excited for the blooper reel. There's a lot of good stuff with Tawny on wires. Tawny on wires is very fun.
I know there are, because I thought I was a good actor, and then the second some weird wire stuff would happen, I was just immediately giggling.
And you guys have seen everything, right? You guys have seen all the episodes now?
Yeah.
Seen the episodes, yeah. Yeah.
It's great. It's honestly great. I've seen it a couple times.
I mean, 9 and 10.
Oh, so good.
Like Dana Reed. I think all the directors did a great job, but I was really impressed with Dana because of the scale of what she had, you know, to do, and the timing. I know it was like, okay, we got to go to this stage and then this stage, but just so fun. And I was getting jealous because I was like, oh, I want people on the spaceship and wires and everything. I want to play with that. But
I don't know if you wanted the stress Dana Reed must have felt. I'm just guessing.
God, yeah.
Those are big. Those are big episodes.
Yeah, but that's part of the game, you know. So
great, guys. Well, appreciate you guys coming through. This is awesome. And I'll see you guys on the flip.
Sounds good, all man. Right. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks,
thank
y'all.
You.
Bye.
All right.
This has been Inside Jokes Space Force. I'm your host, Jimmy O. Yang. Join us again for even more Space Force right here on the podcast.